Hi there, this is Theo the Lion from Between the Lions. You're listening to the podcast where nostalgia comes alive. Keep being wild about reading, and welcome to Jake's Happy Nostalgia Show. Roll it!
Welcome to Jake's Happy Nostalgia Show, the podcast where nostalgia comes alive. Since July of 2021, Jake and his friends have interviewed professionals in the worlds of acting, directing, writing, puppeteering, and many more. Who will they be chatting with in this week's interview? Find out in this Jake's Happy Nostalgia Show episode.
Hey everyone, welcome to this episode of Jake's Happy Nostalgia Show, where nostalgia comes alive. Happy to be here with us. Thank you for joining. As always, I'm your host, Jake Duffenbaugh. With me today, or sorry, our co-host, Chris Bixby and Matt Bingle. How are you guys doing?
Doing good.
Doing good. Hello everybody. How are you, Jake?
I'm doing great, Matt. Thank you for asking.
No, Dad, not Jake. Oh, never mind. God. Jake from State. Yeah, you knew you were going to get this on this show once in a while. Way to go.
Well, Jake, who do we have for today?
We just started. Don't worry about it. Who we got today, Jake?
Well, today's guest we have for today. She's a puppeteer. A lot of you may know her for her puppetry work starring on from Sesame Street, for performing lots of various Sesame Muppets, including Goldilocks, Mama Bear, Sherry, Netherland, and many others. And, of course, we'll touch base on a layer of other puppetry projects that we'll touch base on later, including The Puzzle Place, Bear in the Big Blue House, Jack's Big Music Show, Citizen's Kid, and many others. Please welcome Alice Deneen. How about you here, Alice?
Hi. Happy to be here. I'm doing well, thank you. Happy New Year.
Yes, Happy New Year.
You too.
Yes.
Glad to have you here. So to kick things off, we know who you are, but for those who doesn't, could you tell our audience a bit about yourself and what you do?
Well, I'm a puppeteer that started way back when with the Jim Henson Company, when it was still all one company before it broke into the three parts, sort of Sesame Street, what's now the Disney Muppets, and the Jim Henson Company, which retained the fantasy brands and so on, Dark Crystal Labyrinth, Fraggle Rock. So I started way back when everybody was all under one big umbrella, and I loved it, and I did a little bit of everything, and jumped around a lot from coast to coast, and just tried to learn how to do everything. And of course, when the company separated into pieces, any puppeteers were pretty much able to work for one or two of the parts, but not all three. So I wound up leaving Sesame Street and concentrating on the West Coast. So Disney Muppets and Henson Creature Shop things. And that has worked out really well. I mean, I'm from California, my family's here. So it seemed like the logical move. And I got really, really deeply involved in the Creature Shop and animatronics animation with Country Bears, and then all the way up through Dark Crystal, which was kind of a ultimate fantasy project for me to do. I mean, I don't mean fantasy by genre, but fantasy like dream come true. So that is that's kind of it in the nutshell. I work as a kind of a background puppeteer, backup, doubling people, puppet captaining, and so on for Disney Muppets. And then anything I can with the Jim Henson Company. And very occasionally on Sesame Street, I'll do the Thanksgiving Day Parade.
Nice.
But yeah, mostly I stay out here in the sunshine.
Nice.
Very nice. So what inspired you to want to get a career in puppetry?
Well, being a huge, huge Muppet fan when I was a kid, and there are a number of us who were born in the late 60s and early 70s who were just exactly the right target audience for kind of Jim Henson in his heyday, right? Meaning that we were babies and little kids during Sesame Street, and then, tweens during Muppet Show. And then older tweens during Fraggle Rock, and then just the right age for Labyrinth and Dark Crystal to be cool teens enjoying that. And I was of that cohort and just went right along with him. Anything Henson was just what I wanted to go and be and do. And when I saw a little movie called Dream Child, which is kind of a deep cut, but it was a Creature Shop Alice in Wonderland movie that, you know, I mean, given my name, people have always given me Alice in Wonderland stuff. And I had like 65 illustrated editions of the book in a bunch of different languages and just had always kind of been into it. So being that it was an Alice in Wonderland movie and had hands and puppets, you know, I went like 10 times to the local art house and it just blew my mind. The creatures were that's what I decided I wanted to do. I would tell people, you know, they'd say, what do you want to do when you grow up? And I would say, I want to make monsters for the movies. And so it wasn't necessarily a drive toward the Muppety style puppets. It was really those kind of dark creatures that really got me going. So I mean, as much as I love being a Gelfling and a Podling, being a Skeksis was kind of my favorite thing.
Awesome. Definitely.
Wonderful to hear. So for several years, you puppeteered various roles on Sesame Street. How did you begin working for that?
Sesame Street over the years, to their credit, has put a lot of resources and effort and thought into various diversity initiatives to try to expand the types of characters that that appear on the show. And in the early 90s, they looked around and realized that almost all their principal characters were boys. And part of the reason for that is they didn't have any women on the puppeteering staff. I mean, they had a few, but it was nowhere near half. And as a result, there just wasn't a lot of, you know, there wasn't a ton of talent to draw from, although the talent they had was formidable. I mean, we're talking Fran Brill and Carmen Ospar and people like that. So,
Fran and Carmen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's not that they didn't have amazing people, but there was not enough. So they held an open call audition. And I was working at the Center for Puppetry Arts at the time. And my friend, acquaintance at that point, acquaintancy friend, Peter Lintz, had just come back from his first season on Sesame Street. And I said, I understand Sesame is looking for women. And he said, oh, yeah, they are. And I said, okay, what do I have to do? And he said, well, you have to learn how to use a monitor. And I said, how do you do that? So he showed me in his living room. And then I went up there for this big cattle call audition, and most people didn't know how to use a monitor, so I was already a little bit ahead there. And I think 400 people auditioned, and it was one of those things where there were 400 people on Monday, and 100 people on Tuesday, and 50 people on Wednesday, and 25 people on Thursday, and 10 people on Friday. And mm-hmm. Those 10 people included me and Stephanie DeBruzzo. So they found some people from that process that was pretty exciting. And then they said, okay, thanks. We know who you are. Bye. We'll call you. And I thought, well, that was that. But about, 6 months later, they did call and they said, we're doing the Sesame Street 25th anniversary special in Central Park, and we need every puppeteer we can get. Do you want to come? And so I showed up for that. I think Stephanie did too. Heather Ash, a few other people that were from that group. And so that was my first thing on Sesame Street, was the 25th anniversary special in the Central Park at Cherry Hill. And I had a monkey on each hand, and that's very hard to do, one on each hand, but I didn't realize how hard it was to do, and everyone else was doing it. And, you know, so a little bit of a trial by fire. It was also about 110 degrees in the shade. So it was a difficult first day, but of course I didn't care because I was having so much fun. And that's when I kind of met everybody all in one day, everybody from Carol Spinney to Frank Gauz to, you know, it was just everyone was there, and most of them were really grouchy because it was so hot and so crowded. Nonetheless, one of the best days of my life. So that was how I got started.
Nice. So, one of your earlier recurring characters on Sesame Street was performing Goldilocks. What was it like performing her?
That was a character that I picked up from Camille Bonora. She was kind of stepping away because her family commitments were kind of growing, and she wanted to do a little less. At that point, the Sesame Street season was 5 days a week, 6 months of the year. So it was a big commitment. And so she was ready to not do it anymore. And so it's a little easier trying to adapt an established character than establish one whole cloth, unless it's one of the legacy characters, in which case I don't know, I've never done that, but I think it's probably terrifying. So what was really, really fun about that character was that it wasn't just a standalone, it was always with Baby Bear. So every single time was that dynamic of, you drive me crazy, I just want to hang out and be friends. You're terrible. You're wonderful. Just it was that dynamic all the time. And there are few acting partners in the world better than Dave Rudman. And I have been lucky enough to have that role, Goldilocks Baby Bear, and then also Jack and Mary on Jack's Big Music Show. And it is, I mean, as scene partners go, that's what you want, right? It really helps you be better and grow when you get to do scene after scene after scene with somebody that good. So I was lucky.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes, that dynamic is certainly something. During the Around the Corner era, you also took on the role of Sherry Netherland. For those who don't know, the Around the Corner era was, let's say, in a timeline early to mid 90s, Sesame Street. What was that like performing her?
Really fun. She's very big. Physically a very big puppet, and also a very big personality with these long loopy arms and so on. And for people who don't know, it was kind of like a Fawlty Towers kind of thing, where there was a kind of a wacky hotel and all of the people who lived and worked there and guests coming and going. So there's actually a really rich vein of storytelling that could happen at the Furry Arms Hotel. And I don't know for sure, but I suspect that that was the seed of the Furchester Arms, that spin-off that happened in England. So I mean, I don't know how closely related those are or not, but certainly the Fawlty Towers model of, storytelling comedically in a hotel is, there was always another story to tell there. And that was really, really fun. And to kind of be in the center of the action on that, to be the person trying to keep everybody happy, is a fun dynamic to play. So I really enjoyed that. Again, that was a one that I inherited from Julianne Busher, I believe, who had done a couple of seasons of Sesame Street. She's also a Californian and preferred to be out here. So,
Nice.
So
Also,
she was.
awesome. So now I'm kind of curious, what was it like getting into performing Mama Bear?
That was she's she's not very bright, which is a fun role, always a fun character to try to put some meat on the bones of something that's mom roles are tricky. They don't show up in puppet stuff very often, and usually moms are not stupid, so it's usually they're the ones that have to just put all the pieces back together. So it was fun to play kind of a dingbat, and let Baby Bear be the real brains of the outfit. He always had his ideas and his plans and his, it was so that's fun. It's a supporting role, but a fun one.
Absolutely. And this is kind of more of a deep cut question, but you also worked on the segment Monster Clubhouse. where you performed the character Phoebe. What was it like getting to do that?
That was great because it was really high energy, and that was when they were, yeah, it was unusual for them to introduce a new batch of characters like that. It was very near the end of my time there. I left after 9/11, and that was really right around then. So I didn't get to do it very much, but yeah, it was something that I was, it was certainly something that I enjoyed, but the timing was a little strange.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I love that segment. Like that segment is kind of like some sort of wacky in a way because of them just being like it's weird all the time, and then doing a little emotions, and then doing nap time when it's literally just a few seconds, and then the
Yeah.
elephant just just chasing them.
Yeah, a lot of wacky stuff.
If you really want to see a deep cut from that era that has four that has character four characters like that, there was a brief repeated group of Kingston Livingston and his crew four.
Oh
Did you, I don't
yeah,
know if you ever
yes.
saw that.
I've seen it.
Yeah, and that's that was sort of that kind of, four characters doing high energy kind of intense stuff, but it was on the street, and that was really, really fun. I really enjoyed that, and that's one of Matt Vogel's first big roles as one of the crew four. So it's fun to go back and check that one out. Yeah, so I'm one of the crew four as well, along with
Nice.
Matt, John Tartaglia, and Kevin.
Oh,
Nice.
Johnny,
Yes.
he's great.
Yeah. Oh, he's amazing.
All wonderful
Yeah.
people, yes.
Yes.
Kevin did a great job performing
With that
Kingston.
character, yeah.
Yeah, I
Absolutely.
like Kingston.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
So now, did you have any favorite celebrities to work with on Sesame?
I'm not a country music fan, and I was unaware at the time that I was th there have been a few times when I've started conversing with somebody on the set and I don't know who they are, sometimes there's somebody's uncle from Topeka who's come to visit the set, and I was just talking to this very nice man in a cowboy hat, and we were just chit-chatting. He was asking questions. How are you involved here? I'm like, oh, I'm one of the puppeteers. I'm going to be in the next bit, and I'm just, waiting. We just had this lovely, lovely conversation, and it was Garth Brooks. And I just didn't, I so like didn't know who he was. And then you are lying on the floor, at these people's feet, and often you're eye level with, sort of you can get very intimate with some of these people sometimes. And in order to do what I was doing, I had to sort of be right up, kind of right around his hip region. And it was just good that we'd had that conversation beforehand, because I had to sort of keep apologizing. You have to not worry about personal space, even when you suddenly realize that you've been chatting with a superstar. But yeah, you have to be willing to kind of play Twister with anybody from, Lady Gaga to the First Lady, whoever it is at the time. It's really
Michelle Obama,
interesting.
yeah.
Yeah. They don't care. Nobody sees the human beings on the floor. They only see the puppets. So that's a very interesting phenomenon. Yeah, but we're up close and personal, not only with each other, but with these kind of famous people. It's an interesting perspective.
Yeah, no,
Yes, and
amazing.
the song that that he was a part of, Garth Brooks, and Together We Make Music.
Yeah, and then what about Two Kids Who Are Different? one kid's head is pointy, the other one's round, one's hair stands up and the other's hair goes down. That one. That was the one that we were doing that day.
Oh, nice. Nice. And another one that I saw that you did was the number with Patti LaBelle with a gospel alphabet, yeah.
Do you have some kind of time machine? How do you know all of these things?
Well, I saw it because sometimes they'll like on the Muppet Wiki, if you've seen that, like sometimes they'll show like the list of like puppeteers who like worked on a certain thing.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah,
Not all the time
and they
though,
probably
but
have crazy sources on how they get their information.
Yeah, I mean, well, there are a lot of behind the scenes snapshots and photos as well.
Oh
yeah.
Yeah, in fact, I just found a picture yesterday stuck inside an old drawing sketchbook of mine, and Peter and I were looking at the puppets and at the set and at who was there and Googling, and we found the bit. It was called Dance Like a Penguin, and we watched it, and sure enough, you know what? I'm going to get that picture. I'm going to show it to you. One
Sure,
second.
go right ahead.
Hi. Get out, get out, out, out. This is my interview.
Dear.
Okay. So
Wow.
Wow.
that I found in a sketchbook that I probably haven't opened in 15 years. And
Wow.
it's a and it's you know, obviously Jerry Nelson and Kevin Clash, but you can also see Jim Krupa. I think you can see Pam Arciero over here.
Oh,
And then,
Pam.
I think so.
yeah, I think you can see her profile. But then there's, you know, this headless body here. And Peter said, I had that belt. I think that's me. So we kind of, and then just the way that this character was dressed and the set and the penguins, and we he didn't remember it. Neither one of us knew what it was from. But we tracked it down. So it's,
Nice.
you know, that kind of historical moment that just crops up now and again is fun. And you remember, I mean, you're reminding me of things that I did that I don't even, you know, I wouldn't be able to just regurgitate them spontaneously. So thank you.
Of course. So, kind of moving on from Sesame Street, one of your main puppeteering roles was performing Julie and Sizzle on The Puzzle Place. What was it like working on that show?
That was the first show on which I had a principal role. And it was the best way to learn, because I was with Carmen and Peter and people who you know, Jim Martin and people who had a lot more experience than I did. Yeah, Noel McNeil. I mean, it was just a wonderful group. And we got shipped out to Los Angeles, and we were just all day, every day in front of a camera doing these characters. And when that's your first big thing, that's what you want. You want to not sit in a green room. You want to not, just do a little thing in the background. Like, you just want to be doing dialogue in front of a camera all day, every day. And that's what we got to do. And it's just, there's no better way to learn. Yeah, I got better fast, because it's physically, there's so many weird little muscles that you use, and not only for this style of performance, but also that are individual to each character. Some of them are heavier and harder to move, and some of them you have to have a very specific sense of balance, and some you have to crank your hand down to get focus, and some are, a little more vertical, and some of them are, they're just. It's very specific. So we got to know those specific puppets very well. And we got to know each other, and we got to, and we built our strength and our stamina and our backstories. And it was just a, I won't say it was a long, slow build. It was a long, fast build, because we had to go. We had to do it. And that show, I didn't even really have a place to live. I'd been camping out on a friend's floor in New York, in like an illegal sublet that was had four people in a one bedroom, and it was like that in New York in the early 90s. And I had promised them, I got this job. They're putting me up in Los Angeles. I'm gonna be off your couch, I swear. And then and I was so excited, and nervous and wound up. And then the Northridge earthquake leveled half of Los Angeles. And I think the day before we were supposed to fly out there. So everything got put on hold for a number of weeks. I can't remember exactly how long, at least 2 weeks, maybe 3 or 4. And when we got there were still aftershocks happening. And, we're staying in this little kind of apartment complex thing that wasn't where we were supposed to stay because the places that they booked for us were damaged and evacuated. There's this little pool in the middle of the courtyard, and the water would slosh out of it during the aftershocks, and it was a very weird time to be starting again. But we did it. We got there. We did it anyway. And I just had to. I had to rely on the good graces of my friends in New York, who let me sleep on their couch for another couple weeks. I said, "I promise, I'm going. I'm leaving. I'm going."
Yeah,
I love the connection between Sizzle and Nuzzle on that show. I love it. It's so
Mm.
great.
Puzzle Place as a whole is just an amazing show. It
Yeah,
really
it's very
is.
diverse.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very diverse and
Very, very
inclusive. Because
diverse.
there was also the character Kyle, who was in a wheelchair.
Right.
Yes. Yeah.
And also performer Drew Massey, which we also previously chat. He's wonderful.
That knucklehead. Sorry you had to talk to him. Yeah, it was doing a lot of things way back in the mid 90s that are important again and being emphasized again now,
Oh, yeah.
which is not subtle addressing of DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion stuff. It was addressed hard, right, and specifically, and with good storytelling and funny characters and wonderful music and good comic relief, but the messaging was strong and specific, and you're seeing that happen again, which I think is important. It had gone out of for sure it had gone out of fashion for a while.
Right.
So.
So
Oh yeah.
I was wondering, and if it's fine if you can't, but I was wondering if we could hear a little bit of Julie.
But she was always just my voice a little higher. I mean, kind of had a little more of an attitude. She's definitely the most confident of those most of those kids. She and Leon, they were the ones that, had kind of a way of taking over in a room.
Very
That's
true
great.
indeed.
That's great.
Yes.
Yes.
So, moving on from the Puzzle Place, you were also the original puppeteer of Grandma Flutter on Barry the Big Blue House.
Such a wonderful show.
Yes,
I love that
wonderful
show so
show, and
much.
such a fun character too. What was that like performing Grandma Flutter?
Well, she was just an old version of Sizzle, I'll be honest. Yeah, I mean, she was basically Sizzle the cat. And then with Tedder's family mannerisms on top,
Yeah.
the
Tedder.
hello beer thing happening.
Yeah.
And
Yes.
so that's I mean that was just such a that was a character that I just felt so in the pocket, I thought. And it was not unlike Tutter's sort of raspy, brash thing. So I thought, I'll just do that, but make it older, and that'll be that. And I loved it, and I would have liked to do it a whole lot more, but it was in direct conflict with Sesame and Skeeter. So those were shows that all piled up on one another, and a lot of people had to make some tough decisions, including Peter, who kind of stepped away from Sesame for a while to do Bear.
Right.
Yes, he and Noel both stepped away, and these two little rookies called Eric and Bat took their place.
Yes.
Yeah, it's funny.
Yeah. So another Disney series you worked on was The Book of Pooh, which used tabletop puppetry. Can you kind of talk about working with that kind of style of puppetry compared to Muppet style puppetry?
You have to cooperate. It's the worst. one of the things that I really like about the simplicity of a lot of the Muppet style puppets is that you do everything. You don't have to necessarily, coordinate all the pieces. You want to be able to think with one brain and make your choices with one brain. And when you have to coordinate three different brains to do one move, you get a very nice effect. You get a beautiful effect, but it requires so much rehearsal that it begins to affect the spontaneity. And so there's a trade-off there. But it's also really, really fun to kind of be that person who's on the feet or on the tail or trying to anticipate a move and try to lock brains with somebody else and try to second guess and think what they're going to do. I think, honestly, from my perspective, it's more fun to be an assist on a multi-person character than it is to have an assist. Because I'd rather be the person who's trying to read someone else's mind than the one who's trying to send messages. But it's a different kind of thing. It's a different kind of challenge.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So you also get to perform on some Spiffy Pictures projects, including Jack's Big Music Show, Mary, and Funny Town. What were those shows like?
Adam and David are the best bosses ever. It's just a family because they're brothers. It's first and foremost a family business, and they treat everybody like family. And they really keep things small, they keep them simple, they keep them weird. There is no ego, there's a very high standard of quality and a very, very focused specificity on what is a spiffy show, and what their standards are. He doesn't, I saw them encourage people from the very early phases of their career, and they still do it. Even if the cameras are rolling, even if it's getting late, even if we're going into overtime and somebody's messing up and making a mistake and making the same mistake and making the same mistake, never, never, never would they just have someone more experienced do it. They let them keep trying until they get it. And that to me says everything about why they're so loved, but also why their shows are so why they are the way they are. There's so much heart in them. And I know not everybody has that luxury of being the boss and being in control of all of the time and all of the money, who can just allow that process to carry out. But when you see it happen and you see somebody who's new and somebody who's struggling get it and learn and jump forward a notch, I've seen that happen a number of times on spiffy sets. And I really admire them for that.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Jack's Big Music Show is such a wonderful, wonderful series.
I think so too.
Yes. And there are really lots of cool celebrity guests work on this, including Lori Berkner.
Yep. That's when I was thinking of.
And Jon Stewart?
Jon Stewart was there.
Yes, that's right. Uh-huh.
Who was also on Sesame Street, for those who don't know. He was on Elmapalooza.
Elmapalooza, yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Elmapalooza, so love Steve from Blue's Clues, I think, was on an episode.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, his band.
Yeah, his band.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, he sang a song for one of the videos with the other.
Yeah.
With his performing partner, the other guy, I think his name is also Steve from the Flaming Lips. I don't know, but they sang it was actually for the John Stewart episode. They sing this wonderful song called "I Hog the Ground" for Groundhog's Day. It is a fantastic song.
Yes.
Yeah, I have to go back and watch it. It's been a long time since I've seen that show. Yeah.
The references to Jack Benny are wonderful Easter eggs. If you, the names Jack, Mary, Mel, the Schwartzman Quartet is sort of a take on the Sportsman's Quartet, and it's just you know, little kids will never get it, and most of their parents will never get it. They just did it to entertain themselves. And that's the kind of thing that, I don't know. They're just so great. I'm big, big fans.
Absolutely.
Yep. Fun show indeed. So you also got to perform various puppets on the Comedy Central series, Crank Yankers. Very unique show itself. What was it like working on that?
There's a lot of dirty puppets on that. It's honestly not my favorite thing to talk about, just because there are a lot of things that were in poor taste at the time, but have really become not acceptable now.
Certain things might not age well in today's society. Yeah.
There were things that were funny, you know, that were funny around 2000, because it was equal opportunity offensiveness, but now it's just offensiveness. And we did go back and do a season just a couple of years ago, and certain characters did not appear, and certain lines of joking did not appear. Actually, I think it was still funny, but certain types of humor were gone, and I was happy about that. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful people make that show too. And we had a terrific time. I mean, it was very fun, and I get to work with my sister Carol Binion all day on that show. She's a costumer, and has worked for Sesame Street and Muppets and Crank Yankers and a lot of puppet stuff and a lot of stop motion animation. She makes amazing things. Anyway, she was there all day, every day on Crank. And so that was one of the big draws of working on that one for me.
Nice. And you also got to work with the Henson Digital Performance System, including with the series Sid the Science Kid, where you played Sid's mom as well as Gabriella. What was it like working on that and kind of working with digital puppetry?
I like to call it my kind of video game, because it's... you know, you're working toward a very specific objective digitally through an input device. There's time pressure, and there are goals, and there are, you know, it's a video game, but there's no, you know, blood or killing or scary things that jump out at you. And it's, you know, so I just found it a delight. I mean, I'm not a gamer, but I was happy to do that all day. It did not feel like work.
Sid the Science Kid's a wonderful show. There's so many great episodes and songs from it too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Uh huh. Yeah. One of the episodes I want to mention is the No School Sing Along special.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you like that one?
I love that episode. So
such
wonderful,
a fun,
and
such
the
a
mom
fun one that is.
And the part, like, at the end, the episode where it was Sid was like way too excited that he can't sleep because of the how that day went, and basically the mom singing the breathe in, breathe out song.
That's such a beautiful song.
It is.
And the voice of that character is actually provided by the suit performer, not by the digital puppeteer. That was one of the rare occasions when the dialogue was done by the performer who was out on the floor in the ping pong ball suit. That was a nice kind of change up. Actually, the same thing on Word Party, the suit performer for Tilly the Turtle.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Risa May, the suit performer for that, did the very limited vocalizations that Tilly ever did.
Nice.
Yeah. Yes, so it's nice. Yeah. It's nice that they don't bring in a third person from outside, but one of the two people who create the character. Henson's pretty good about that. Yeah. Unless they really need somebody who's like on Slumberkins, we were performing to a recorded track because they needed children's voices specifically. And you can fake that. We do it all the time. We pitch our voices up and do kid voices, but there's something about the real kid voices, sort of Charlie Brown style. You know, you can tell it's really a kid and not an adult being a kid. That's very charming. I like doing that now and again. They even had some children making calls on Crank Anchors, and I always enjoyed that too. It was always either Jimmy Kimmel's kids or John Kimmel's kids, but when you hear real kids, it's, you can't really sub for that.
Right.
Yes. It just sounds good. Wonderful series. And yeah, you actually also got to be a part of the City Science Kid, the movie as well.
Oh yeah.
If you remember that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a cool script. It was interesting to see it go to a bigger story. And to see them, be in just a larger, kind of a larger setting.
Right. Yeah,
that was exciting.
Absolutely. So I know a lot of us, the Science Kid fans, are wondering, of course, it's fine if you can't. Is it fine if we can hear a little tiny bit of Gabriella? If you remember what the voice was?
Honestly, I think it's very similar to my voice, but maybe just a little bit more forward. And I have to think about the placement of each one of these. And she got, she definitely got a little bit over Sid sometimes.
So
there's a little bit of that dynamic happening.
Right.
One thing that was fun with that character and that you can do with HDPS that you can't do with a lot of characters is that, when they're out playing, you can have a more general look for their eyes, but those characters were often handling things very close to their faces. And so we would have little triggers that we could hit that would actually tighten the focus of the pupils down and in so that it really looked like they were looking at something very close to where they were. But then if they ever looked up to look distance, their eyes would look crossed and weird. So it was nice being able to change the focus of the actual pupils digitally. That was something that was fun about that. It always felt like an extra little magic trick that you can't do with most puppets.
Absolutely. Yeah, such a wonderful show. So now, aside from TV puppetry, you also puppeteer in a number of films, including the Disney movie The Country Bears. What was that like?
That was so fun. That was sort of the last of the big creature shop features that came along before CG kind of wiped it out. Basically, when we saw what year was Gollum in Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings? I mean, he was the first CG character. We all saw that. I think it was about 2001, 2000.
Yeah, sounds about
somewhere
right.
Around there. 2001, 2002, maybe.
Yeah. So that was right when we were shooting Country Bears, and when we mm-hmm. saw that, we thought we're not going to be doing big animatronics anymore. And that was true for a really, really long time. I mean, for about, I don't know, at least a decade and a half, the effects were all digital, and you could do amazing things, and you still can. I mean, you can do things that are so real. And it's interesting that people are kind of cycling back to practical effects and real characters. There's just no way that something like The Mandalorian would have been the same if Grogu was digital, you know,
right.
if he wasn't right there and able to be touched and picked up and shot like a real thing. And it makes a difference, and it's nice to see people using that when it's appropriate, and then, you know, going for the big CG things when it makes sense to do so. But I love that filmmakers are going back to using puppets and animatronics again here and there.
Absolutely, yeah.
Oh yeah, been a big resurgence the last few years, especially, which is nice. So moving on to your work with the Muppets, can you kind of talk about what it was like working on Muppets Tonight?
Oh, I didn't work much on Muppets Tonight because it conflicted with a show called Aliens in the Family, which ran briefly on ABC, but had gone on the air at the same time as another show with a very similar concept on NBC called Third Rock from the Sun. So it was bad timing that sort of similar sitcoms were in development at the same time. So Aliens in the Family was really yeah, I thought it was fun. I thought the writing was very smart and very good. But the production schedule went right up against Muppets Tonight. And so I didn't actually wind up working on it very much. I think I was on one episode.
Ah.
So, yeah. Just as you know, things in the background.
Yeah. So now what's it like getting to work on Muppets from Space?
That was a good education in feature films. That was the first kind of Muppety feature I worked on, which is a different pace and a different scale and a different size. And you know, you really, when you work on a project like that, it's that you're not going home and sleeping in your own bed at night. We all went to North Carolina, and it's an interesting experience because you just live it and breathe it, and those people are the people in your life. It's all the people that you're able to ever see, and you spend your weekends with them, and you're away from home, you're out of your environment, you're away from your other responsibilities, and you really just focus in on making a movie. And I actually really enjoyed that. It feels making a film like that, especially on location, which I haven't done that many times, feels like one of those special world moments in your life where it's just separate, it's a set aside time, and you really focus on what you're doing, and you really I loved it.
Right. And I know you also got to on that movie, you got to perform one of the alien gonzos.
Mm-hmm.
That's a wonderful scene.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's lots of, what's fun about all of those scenes is that they're just richly populated with, either in the house, there are Muppets everywhere, or for the aliens, that they're all over the place. And there were so many of them. And it was terrifically fun.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I just love that film.
Yes. Great, great, great film. Moving ahead, speaking of movies, you also got to work on the Muppets 2011 movie starring Jason Segel and Amy Adams.
Mm-hmm.
Did you get to work with them at all with that?
With Jason and Amy?
Mm-hmm.
Basically in that movie, I did a lot of hands, a lot of background characters, some doubling of, you know, there are plenty of times when, you know, the same person plays Kermit and Beaker. So you have to, you have to jump in, and you know the same person is Piggy and Fozzie and Animal, and you know when they're all in one set stage, scene is the word I'm looking for. Then you know you jump in and you double for those characters, and you have to, you know, you have to be willing to step in for any of those characters. So you kind of have to know what the principal performer would do for a whole library of characters. And they do it some for each other, for sure. They will, but usually those, you know, six, seven principal performers are busy doing their own principal characters. So they're not doubling someone else's principal characters. So there's a small library of us that really watch all the little mannerisms for two dozen different characters, and have to be willing and ready to jump in. And so that's what something like the 2011 movie is, or you know, Muppets from Space, or even working on Muppets Mayhem. There's lots and lots of just stepping in when somebody gets a positive COVID test, they're like, oh, you're going to be employed today. And so, you know, it's you gotta be ready, which is kind of an interesting position to be in. But I enjoy the challenge. So that's, and that's something that, you know, was true. I kind of learned to do on that 2011 movie is, that's when they really started trusting me with doubling the principals. And it was, you know, it's fun. It's a fun place to kind of graduate to.
Right. Right. So some of your most recent projects with the Muppets include various characters on Muppet Haunted Mansion. Can you kind of talk a bit about that?
You know, the Muppets don't throw out new characters that have dialogue very often. You know, it might be a line or two, but that, like, that mummy was a recurring character with a little bit of an arc, and it was really exciting and fun to get to take a crack at that. And it feels different from doing, and I've done principal characters on a lot of stuff, including for Henson and so on, but for some reason on a classic Muppet thing to get to do a character it because they rarely open up the group to, you know, to be honest, a new character means building something, unless they can pull it from the library, which they did with the Muppet and with the mummy and the skeleton. But you know, I mean, I get it. There's not a lot of opportunities because it's a set cast of characters, and so the fact that there was a chance to do that and that they trusted me with it was very exciting and fun. And it was a very compressed schedule because we didn't have a ton of time, and it was during COVID, so we were all masked, which isn't great when you're, you know,
down right
in weird mm-hmm. in weird positions anyway. It's already hard enough to be, you know, on rollers and a weird position and down and trying to create a new character, and then to have a mask and goggles, and it was a lot. But it was, you know, once again, that's the gig, as I like to say. And you just deal with it and you make it work and you find a way. And you know, I thought that project turned out marvelously well. It was really fun.
Yes.
And so different, you know, just not what you usually see. And the I love that mixture of Muppets plus something we all know equals something new, like Christmas Carol, Treasure Island, Haunted Mansion. I think it's a good formula. I like it a lot. And I could, you know, I'd like to see more stuff like that.
Oh yes, that would be great.
So would we.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yes. So your latest project with the Muppets was on the Disney Plus Emmy Awards series on the Muppets Mayhem. Can you share any memories from that show?
Once again, I mean, you guys have mentioned it over and over, but I cannot not mention the music on that one.
Oh my gosh,
Oh,
yes.
the music.
That's one of the best things about all of these projects that you're mentioning. Almost every single one of them has a huge component of original music, that are written by incredibly talented composers and session performers and so on. And it's just an extraordinary privilege to get to perform and be involved in that kind of in those kinds of musical moments. I mean, especially if it's a big production number with a lot of choreography and dancing chickens and so on. I mean, who doesn't love that? But just being able to, some of those songs we heard in, an original scratch version and then unmixed and then mixed and then with another layer of horns added and then with, we just heard them over and over and over again as they developed and grew. And that's It was just so impressive to me. So,
Yes, love that series so much. It's so great.
yes,
And Ringo Starr actually got to do the drums for one of the songs, which that was really
yeah, that
awesome.
was really cool.
That's right. That's
Really
right.
amazing.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So since we're getting close to wrapping up here, can you share any projects at all that you're working on currently?
Well, it's funny, I've done a few podcasts recently about, my puppet career and the one thing that gets lost, I don't know why people don't ask about Dark Crystal.
Oh, Dark Crystal, Age of Resistance.
Age of Resistance.
Yeah. I mean, that's not something I'm working on now, but I just want to mention it. I mean, I mentioned it briefly earlier, but I mean, it's the thing that I'm proudest of for sure. Even though it ultimately wasn't my voice on Brea, it was on the Ornamentalist. But I just that was like a landmark experience, and I was so grateful for that opportunity. And I had so much fun with getting to know all those British puppeteers.
Yeah, right, because that was done in the UK.
And then you've got people like Dave Chapman and Louise Gold
Oh,
and
love
Warwick Brownlow
Louise.
Pike,
Louise, yes.
and we were together all day every day for a year. Unbelievable experience. And just and like I said, I like those sort of dark, weird things. Loved the original Dark Crystal, and for me, that's a career peak. So, I don't want to sign off without sending Age of Resistance a little love.
Right, of course.
What was it
Absolutely.
all?
I wish there were more episodes of it. It was a good
Yeah, I know.
it was a fun little show. I mean, I know it was kind of only like a prequel series, but there were only 10 episodes, so it would have been nice to see more. But it's a really good show.
Yes,
Yeah,
absolutely.
yeah. I know, same with Muppets Mayhem, 10 episodes sometimes has to just you just have to let it stand alone as a 10 episode limited series. So, like both of those are there's such, there's such entire worlds and there's such, it's a good arc within 10 episodes on both of them. But you're left wanting more for sure in the case of both of them.
Oh,
Yeah.
yes.
Yeah, so to wrap this up, the last question that Matt's going to ask is a question we ask all of our guests at the end. Go ahead, Matt.
Thank you, Chris. This podcast is called Jake's Happy Nostalgia Show. When you think of nostalgia, what do you think of? Or in your own words, how do you define the word nostalgia?
Oh, yeah, it's that thing where when you see a piece of ephemera from something that just instantly gives you a warm, fuzzy feeling inside, and you think, "Oh, I loved that." Then I'll often, if I see something online that just triggers a childhood memory, I'll often go down a rabbit hole and look at it, and then of course I'll wind up on eBay or Etsy or something. eBay especially, and like I could get that doll that I had when I was a kid, and that thing that I saw an image of that triggered this feeling, and it could arrive on my doorstep next week, but I don't want it. I don't want the thing. It's the you know, it's all about the memory of how it made me feel at the time, and what, you know, what, how it ever so slightly bumped my trajectory to where I am, to where I am now. And that's, you know, that's what nostalgia is to me, is it's often appreciation for something that, you know, I may have maybe had forgotten about, or didn't realize I had such strong feelings for, but then I realized, oh, that may have spurred my interest in this, which led to that. And then I wound up doing that little project, which this person, you know, it just, there's always a lot of appreciation in nostalgia to me, because everything that you loved back in the day has pushed you to where you are now. So
absolutely, great words to end on.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yes, well, Alice, thank you so much, yes, for taking the time to do this. This was a blast.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for doing all the research and asking such evocative questions, which is really nice. You know, it's nice to take a little walk down memory lane. I guess that's what the show is all about.
Yes.
Yeah, pretty much.
Thank you so much, mm-hmm, for taking the time for you to hop on, and thank you so much, you know, for what you've done, your puppetry work, what you've done over years, and keep up the great work of what you're doing now. I cannot wait what's next in store for you. And of course, a big congratulations to you and Peter.
Yes. Thank you. Thanks, yes, very much.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That was something we never could have predicted back in the olden days.
Yeah, and then like sizzle and nozzle, and then grandma fart.
Yeah, right.
And then
that's crazy.
Stuck on our minds.
How in the world?
It's a very weird feeling.
Yes, but very happy for you both.
Yes.
We still kind of look at each other sometimes, and we say, "Wait a minute, you? It's you?"
Sure. Yeah.
Wait, is that you in there?
Yes. Well, keep in touch, Alice. Enjoy the rest of your day, and I'll let you know when this goes up.
Okay. Thank you so much. Yes. Have a good day, guys.
You too, Alice. Yes,
bye.
Too.
Bye.
Alice.
Bye.
Take care. Bye. Bye.
But it's goodbye from us as well, everybody. We absolutely enjoy our time with Alice Dineen. Keep on the lookout for more wonderful interviews coming your way, and of course, you know, again, we're very happy for her and Peter.
Yes.
Yes, of course, everything from social media and everything, we'll switch them down below so you guys can give a follow what she's done,
yep,
what she's doing currently as well, and everything else.
Yes. But once again, keep on the lookout for more wonderful interviews coming your way, and as always, what do we say, Jake?
Keep nostalgia alive. Take care, everyone. See you next time. See ya. Bye.
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 Thank you for tuning in to another wonderful Jake's Happy Nostalgia Show interview. Be sure to follow Jake and the crew on social media and stream the show wherever you find your favorite podcasts. And as always, remember to keep nostalgia alive. Bye-bye.